from the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont. This is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview from the archives with local author and Queen City Ghost Walk guide, Thea Lewis, about her book, Haunted Inns and Ghostly Getaways of Vermont, published by the History Press. Since I spoke to Thea, she has gone on to publish other books, including Lakeview Cemetery of Burlington, Vermont, which tours readers through that burial ground, as well as a children's book, There's a Witch in My Sock Drawer. Thea Lewis is a Vermont native and the creator of Queen City Ghost Walk, the haunted tour chosen Best Scary Stroll by Yankee Magazine. Called Vermont's Queen of Halloween, she's been scaring up history in Burlington and beyond since 2002 with her tours, special events, and books for adults and children. Haunted Inns and Ghostly Getaways of Vermont introduces readers to the creaks and groans in the night that remind guests they might not be alone in Vermont's inns. The book shares the history behind some of the Green Mountain State's spookiest places to spend the night. Loyal guest Mary Todd Lincoln enjoyed her annual respites at the Equinox Hotel in Manchester so much that death could not interrupt the tradition. Some still feel the presence of Al Capone in the underground bar he favored at Highgate Manor. The show goes on for the ghost of tap dancing hero Boots Berry at Stowe's Green Mountain Inn. And Queen City Ghost Walk creator and author Thea Lewis shares chilling encounters and examines the spirits of the past that are not quite resting in peace. When I spoke with Thea, I began by asking her why so many people ask her if she believes in ghosts, which is something that she has written about. Does she think this question is driven by skepticism or the need for permission to believe themselves? I hope you enjoy our conversation.
I think it's more their need for me to give them permission. And I always explain to them, I come from a family that is a little bit ghosty. Yeah. I remember stories passed down from the time I was very small about an aunt that used to see a character before someone important to the family, it could be a relative, could be a close friend, passed away. She would always have this premonition, and she would see this kind of dark figure. She called him the dark man. He was dark clothing, dark hat. She would see him kind of in her peripheral vision, and she knew something was going on. She would mention it often to another family member. And when she first started telling this story, she was a child, and people found it difficult to believe her. But people began to place more and more stock in this as she got older.
She know who it referred to?
She would not know who it referred to.
How scary.
It was scary.
It must have made her very anxious.
I think it would have made me awfully anxious. And she seemed to, as she got older, she passed away in her 60s, and I think that she had started to take it in stride.
Yeah.
But about 10 years before she passed away, I remember being a teenager and remember that she was working in a little corner bar in Burlington. She was working in the kitchen. And she saw this character, this man in black character that she would see, and came home and told me about it. And about an hour later, we were notified that her brother, who lived out of state, had passed away.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so there was never anything that I really, it was something I thought, that's interesting, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I never really kind of embraced the whole spiritual side of my family and what that was until these things started happening, first to my daughter before I ever had a ghost tour. It seems that the family line just skipped me a little bit with this premonition thing. But then when I started Queen City Ghost Walk, I started getting a whole lot closer to my spiritual side.
Mm.
Yeah.
The story about your aunt just reminds me a little bit of The Book Thief, and it makes me wonder if there aren't sort of reasons behind these stories that are passed down through different cultures that, lead to depictions in literature. I don't know if that sounds familiar to you at all, but the dark figure.
Right.
Yeah,
and I thought it was interesting. Jay Allen, a professor emeritus at UVM, he was teaching a few years
Ethan and Ira fame?
Of Ethan and Ira fame, yeah.
He is part of
that family, and he's got other great lineage, people who are prominent in Burlington's history and Burlington's actual founding and incorporation. But he was teaching a class in paranormal psychology at the University of Vermont years ago. I met him, and he wanted to bring his class on one of our Queen City Ghost Walk tours.
So fun.
And he said, every culture, every country has a life after death story to it. Wherever you go, people believe in life after death.
Yeah.
And however that is, reincarnation or your standard, you know, the great beyond, heaven, whatever. And it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
So the people who are skeptical, I think everybody is looking for something to believe. And even the skeptics who come on the tour who ask me, do you believe in this? I think they've got their own stake in it, their own small stake somehow, but they're not looking as much as the other people, that sort of permission to believe.
Yeah.
I think that they're looking to be able to discount as much as they can to figure out what to believe.
Well, and nobody knows, right? So
nobody
I'm sure
knows.
Everybody has some little part of that spectrum from belief to disbelief.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I had a last night was our last UVM tour of the season, and I had some folks, a nice, for us, an intimate tour. You know, less than 20 people is an intimate tour for us now.
Yeah.
And one of the women on the tour was asking me what I thought about why people stick around. Why do spirits make themselves known after they've passed on? And I have a great friend whose name is Nan O'Brien. She's a medium.
Oh, you mentioned her in the book.
Yeah, yeah. Medium and intuitive counselor. And she talks about after we pass on, sometimes there are entities that are just so interested still in the goings-on in the lives of the people who were their loved ones before they died, that they hang out. They want to impart advice. And you know, some of these characters, we just know as guiding spirits. They don't ever really identify themselves, but sometimes they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You talk in the, I don't know if you call it the prologue, but you talk in the beginning of the book about an exercise that you recommend people doing at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yes.
And I wonder if you can just share that, because I thought that was a really interesting exercise.
Sure. So sitting in your house at about 3 o'clock in the morning, listen closely and see what it is you hear in your house that can't be explained by the tick of your appliances or the normal shifting of things outside the house. No people, no pets making noise.
Mice.
No mice. Just kind of ground yourself in the noises that your house makes.
Yeah.
Because I know my house, which was built near the Champlain Parkway in Burlington years ago, is a modern, fairly modern home built in the late 60s. But we've got a lot of really interesting sounds that we can't explain, including the sounds of in our family room. I will get up early in the morning and be writing, and I will hear a conversation, a barely discernible, murmured conversation near me. And I think if I was somebody who rejected the idea of spirits, I might be frightened. I might say, oh, gosh, you know, what is that? I want to get away from that. But it's kind of comforting to me.
Yeah. You do make the case in the book that sometimes, or at least in this one case, a spirit followed someone home. I would think that of many people in Burlington, you'd be somebody the spirits might be following home.
Well, you know, it's funny. Following home, I don't know, but I was on my way to a private tour in City Hall Park one night. It was our off season, springtime, and so I was wearing my normal garb, my dark clothing, my long cape. And usually when I meet someone for a tour, private or public, I'm carrying a lantern, an actual working oil lantern. And I was walking across the park, and I got to the appointed meeting place. My group wasn't there. It was a group of young women. It was a bridal party, bridal shower. So I waited a little bit on the steps of City Hall, and this very nicely dressed young gentleman who was sitting waiting for someone, he was meeting someone as well, I said, you know, I'm worried that my group has misplaced themselves. I'm worried that they think we're supposed to meet her on the other side of the building. If you see a group of young women come up looking like they're looking for someone, could you let them know I'll be right back? And he said, sure, I'll do that. And so I went and came back, and I thanked him, and he said, I wanted to say something to you, but I don't know how you'll take it, so I'm just going to say it. And I said, well, what did you want to say? And he said, when you were coming through the park with your lantern, when you were walking over here to the stairs, you had somebody following you. A couple of people, in fact. And so I immediately start to get paranoid. It's the park, it's dark. And I said, what do you mean? What do you mean I had somebody following me? And he said, no, this is going to sound really weird to you, but it was nobody you would have seen probably, but I saw them. And then he proceeded to explain that he comes from a family that is a little bit familiar with the other side.
He
said, as I had walked across City Hall Park, one person, then another person had joined me and were following me. So, the idea that when I'm leading tours, there are the folks that I can see and the folks that I can't see. We have had interesting things happen on at locations on tours that I have not been able to explain. Last year, I was doing a private tour, and I experienced some type of ghostly presence at a very modern haunt on my tour. It was just the essence of it was very cloudy, and it swirled up, and people laugh when I tell them this, like a creamy, you know, how a creamy builds and builds and builds.
Yeah.
Well, this group of people standing at this location, and while they were standing there, there was a young woman who was leaning up against a tree, and this thing kind of swirled up next to her to about her height, stayed that way for, I would estimate, 7 to 10 seconds, and then just kind of dissipated and swirled back down. Now, went
did
over...
Did everyone see it?
No, I was the only one who saw it. Went over after the tour and was checking around on the ground. There's a bank, People's United Bank. I was looking for a vent. I was looking for some type of geological feature in the ground, like maybe they'd done some kind of... there was some kind of construction, there was something there, nothing there. But it's just so funny. At the Follett House, it's a wonderful mansion in Burlington, the Pomerleau Real Estate Agency inside. Yeah. Two summers ago, for about 2 weeks' time, I would go on our summer tours, and when I would get to the Follett House, this little brown rabbit would hop up as our tour approached, sit over a little away from the group, listen to the entire story, and then when we would leave, the little brown rabbit would hop away.
That's so funny.
I had
and it happened multiple times.
Happened multiple times.
Wow.
Happened for a couple of weeks every time we visited the Follett House. And a person I know who is in touch with the sort of spirit animal side of things said, maybe this is a spirit that is somehow representing, this little kind of benign brown bunny.
Right.
But it was funny. And every night, people on the tour, you could see them listening to me, but they were distracted. Out of the corner of their eye, here's this rabbit.
Right.
Sitting on the ground.
There. Mom, it's still there.
It's still there. Why is it listening to you?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Actually, bringing up the rabbit reminds me of a question I had, which was, some of the stories in this book, which the stories mostly concern inns and haunted, bed and breakfasts and places like that. But so you'll talk about pets that respond to, what they probably feel as paranormal, or what we would interpret as paranormal activity. So have you any theories about what they're responding to? Or?
Well, I think that animals, for instance, take my dog Zeus.
Okay.
He's very bright for a dog, but he doesn't have the kind of filters that you or I might have when it comes to dealing with something supernatural.
Right.
I mean, to him, whatever he senses is what he senses.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there have been times when I've heard this conversation while I've been writing, and Zeus will pull himself up from, he'll be reclining on the floor. He'll pull himself up almost, to a very alert position, and a couple of times he's just started howling.
Right.
He senses something there. I do think that, like small children, pets just don't have that kind of preconceived notion that this can't be happening. I've heard people lots of times. There was a couple who came on one of our Darkness Falls tours back around 2007, 2008, and they had just purchased an older home in Richmond, Vermont, and they were completely creeped out by the fact that on several occasions they had heard their children playing downstairs in the middle of the night, and they would go downstairs and the children would be talking not to one another but to something else in the room. Yeah, and they wanted to talk to me about, how do I get rid of this person? And I said, well, has anything terrible happened? And they said, no. And I said, I think that this entity, whoever it is, feels safe talking with the children, but, until you've got something awful going on. Really, the only thing that's happening is the kids are, their sleep is being disturbed. You can say to whoever it is, listen, we don't mind you being here, but just don't wake up the kids in the middle of the night. Right. That's just not cool.
Now, that brings me to another question I had, which was, does this work ever feel dangerous to you? Or do you hear stories that make you think that there are dangerous entities?
Well, you know, I mention, I think, a little bit in this book that there are people, and certainly if you watch a lot of the ghost shows on TV, you'll just be, you know,
terrified all the time.
It can curl your hair, some of the stuff that happens. And they go into all of these places, these, old asylums and old hospitals and old, old military barracks and things like that. And my advice to people who hope to be amateur ghost hunters is, be careful what you wish for. Don't go into a place like that if you don't want to be subject to that kind of stirred up energy from a traumatic event, from an emotional time. I have experienced the deepest or most plaguing emotion, I guess, from spirits that I've encountered has been sort of the kind of sarcasm that I learned about after the fact from the Richmond Victorian Inn, which is a story in the book.
Yes.
Yeah. We had one spirit there who seemed to be willing to be very kind to me. Actually, we had a voice phenomenon, a file that Matt Borden, who is the head of the Vermont Spirits Detective Agency, played for me, a spirit that during an investigation said, share my bed. But we also had another spirit there that night, a very impatient spirit who, while I was chatting with the group, I had ended a sentence abruptly, and we learned that afterward he had finished my sentence in a very sarcastic way. So,
right. So now that brings up two questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, why would ghostly voices only be heard with the help of equipment, and what does that equipment pick up? How does that work?
Well, the equipment that Matt has, and you can pick up electronic voice phenomenon, an EVP, with very simple equipment. Digital recorder.
Okay.
You know, if you bring out a digital voice recorder, and certainly people have you have to magnify it sometimes many times after you download it onto your computer. Matt usually comes. He is packing the arsenal. He's got his computer hooked up and cabled. He has infrared lights. He has cameras. But always when I'm on an investigation, I bring my own digital recorder. Anybody hanging out who is interested in collecting this evidence will bring their own digital recorder. And one of the reasons that it's difficult to get that kind of evidence firsthand is because even on the quietest ghost investigation, there are so many distractions.
Mm-hmm.
People's stomachs growl. Mm-hmm. People are shifting positions, because if you're sitting in a position for 20 minutes, you're going to feel like your knees are cramping up,
yeah,
or you're losing circulation in your toes or whatever. And also, I mean, it's so hard for a spirit, I think, to make their presence known, mm-hmm, not just with all of these distractions, but I mean, think about what it might take to respond to just a casual question. There was the time that Matt and his partner Gloria and I went to the Bittersweet House on the UVM campus. We were so determined. We really wanted to be able to communicate with Margaret Smith, one of the ghosts there. We would have been pleased to communicate one-on-one at the haunt with anybody who had lived in the house. And it was only later, after Matt had gone through the evidence, really combed through the evidence, that he found the one EVP that we were comfortable saying, yes, that is an actual EVP. It was the three of us in the house. And that was when the ghost was asked, when Daisy Smith was asked, how do you like the house now? What do you think about what they've done to it? And she said, well, it's not very comfortable. And Daisy Smith was this wonderful writer in the city of Burlington, lived in Bittersweet from the 30s to the 60s. That is, the story of Daisy Smith is actually in Haunted Burlington.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But at the Richmond Victorian Inn, there was a small group of us, but still, we were hoping while we were in the room that we could see the phenomenon of this rocking chair rocking back and forth. That's said to happen in the Pansy Room at the inn. The chair rocks by itself. And that didn't happen, but as we were there, quiet and investigating, still apparently it wasn't it wasn't quietly enough for us to be right. able to actually, you know, hear. And interestingly enough, the two EVPs that Matt has found so far from that investigation happened while we were talking. So we were so distracted. We were getting ready to investigate rather than sitting in okay. the actual quiet part of the investigation. And that's when the characters decided to talk.
Now, you've mentioned this is the other thing that came up when you just told that story, the Vermont Spears Detective Agency. Who are they and what do they do?
Matt Borden and Gloria DeSosa are the two main figures of the Vermont Spears Detective Agency. And they're very kind.
With are they amateur, in Burlington?
They are in Burlington. They're based out of Burlington. And it's funny. I do mention in Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain, my second book, Matt wanted to do ghost investigations, wanted to have his own agency, and he went on the $25,000 pyramid and won money. Or I don't know if at that point
it was
the it's a game show on TV, and I may be misremembering. It was either the when it was the smaller pyramid or when it was I think it might have been when Meredith Vieira was the host. So he was hoping to go for the big prize, but he won a lower tier prize. Meredith Vieira said, so, you know, if whatever you win, what are you going to do with that money? And he said, I think I'm going to start a ghost investigation company in Burlington, Vermont. And he did.
Wow. So that's a nice plug for it right there.
Wonderful plug. So Gloria and Matt are partners in the ghost investigation agency and in life. And they have a group of folks that they know, that they feel comfortable investigating with, regulars, but they've also been very kind about letting other people who are aspiring ghost investigators come and join their investigations. And you know, one of the things that we always tell folks when they come in with us is you need to know how to be quiet. These investigations you see on these TV shows are edited so that all of the most exciting stuff is out there, but ghost investigations can be very boring.
Well, yeah. Well, it's sort of like any investigation, I imagine. You sit yeah. around waiting for things to happen, and then they do quickly.
Yes, you wait for things to happen.
Okay. Yeah. There's a picture of the Round Church in the Richmond Victorian Inn chapter. I'm just wondering, is there any evidence that that's at all haunted?
Well,
I didn't see that there was.
No, and okay. It's funny. I would not say hard evidence, but I have since talked to people, since the book came out, who are familiar with the Round Church. And one of the things that I didn't know that I found out after the fact was that the Round Church, you'll look at it, and it's not exactly round. It's got 16 sides that
yes.
give it the illusion of being round. And do you have any idea why that Round Church was built?
The devil can't find a corner.
The devil can't hide in the
right.
corners. So I just love that. And ghost investigation team, and I do not know the name because the folks from the Historical Society can't remember who the team was that went in. I can only tell you it wasn't Matt Borden and his team. But they said that the overriding feeling in the church, and other people have shared this opinion, is that there are very good, peaceful spirits in the church. So no wonder it's such a wonderful place. And so other than being great for a photo op just about any time of year, what a great place to get married,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah.
the overriding sensation is that of contentment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved getting married. That. And the other thing that's a little nugget of information is that there's actual graffiti upstairs that was carved into the pews in the 1800s by kids who were there for services.
Isn't that wonderful?
Go up and see little things that were carved in by the kids that were sitting in services.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that great? So how else did you go about researching each inn? Did you mostly rely on the innkeepers, or were you doing other research as well?
I relied a lot on the innkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
I relied on Matt Borden and his team, and also some other ghost investigation. You wouldn't believe the number of entities in the state of Vermont, folks
right.
who like to go out and look at all of these wonderful historical places. But also, there are people that I counted on to be able to, once I was working on a story, to be able to help me flesh it out, a lot of times with photos.
Mm.
There's a wonderful guy who takes cemetery photography here in the state of Vermont. His name is Daniel William Barlow.
Oh.
And he helped me with a couple of different photos for the book. And, you know, you get to talking. It's funny, once you once you're in this business, you'd be surprised the people who do other things as far as their regular careers, who are fascinated by this stuff.
Yeah.
Alice Levitt, who is known by many as a food writer for Seven Days, she's fascinated with the great beyond and all things funereal loves the idea of cemeteries.
And you had a chapter in here where she helped you talk about haunted restaurants, right?
Haunted restaurants,
yeah.
That's right. She was actually, I had to write about Alice because she was sort of the inspiration for which way I would go with this.
Okay.
She had done an article, she and Corinne Hirsch in 7 Days, about haunted restaurants. Some of them were attached to haunted inns, and I thought, well, my goodness, the History Press would like me to write something. I can't decide. I'll write about haunted inns, haunted restaurants, ghostly getaways, great cemeteries.
Perfect.
Where people could bring a picnic lunch
and
investigate on their own all of the wonderful history that Vermont has to offer.
And I will say that each section sort of has, like, your own personal story, recounted stories, actual history that you've clearly researched about the people that used to live in the house, and then a little helpful sort of tour guide thing at the end where you sort of tell them how to get in touch and what the address is, and which is a nice format.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah. That's something that I generally do. We do all of our ticketing for our ghost tours through the Flynn Center now, and we have for a few years. But you don't know how many times folks will write before they purchase their tickets, and they'll ask me questions about what I think is the best time to go and what's going on in the city of Burlington. And I will often, my husband laughs at this, I'll send them back, oh, well, we're so happy for your interest, and also while you're here, you know, you might want to do this, this, and this, and here are our favorite restaurants, and we'll give them something that might be a little spendier, sort of special experience, a special experience that's mid-range, and then something that is, one of the things that I love to tell people is there's this great place on North Street in Burlington, the Shopping Bag Incorporated, and they were voted by the Food Network as one of the best burgers in the United States.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's a burger that's named after a guy who used to be local cop on the beat, Dave Seebeck, and it's called the Seebeck Sizzler. It's a huge burger, and often I will tell folks, you know, you can't have the full Burlington experience unless you go to the Shopping Bag, pick up your Seebeck Sizzler, pick up your sodas, and head to Battery Park, which has this wonderful view that, Rudyard Kipling said was one of the most beautiful views in the world.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay, great. I would describe the voice in this book as friendly and a little folksy and sort of tongue-in-cheek. I'm just going to read one thing that you wrote. This is like, it's all over the place, but here's a quote. If you know what a Gauss meter is and you live in New England, there's more than a ghost of a chance that a visit to Highgate Manor in Highgate Center is on your bucket list. So I love the persona in the books, and I'm wondering if that's sort of your persona on the tours too, or do you do something a little bit different when you're leading it? I have to go on one of your tours.
Oh, you really have to.
I know.
Yeah. You know, I think that my persona on the tours is a little less folksy than I am in real life, because I'm mindful of the fact that I've got this broad audience, and but I am kind of I'm kind of folksy. My husband blames this on the fact that I was partly raised by my grandmother, who I will come out with some expression, and he will say, you know, you're not 80 years old. And I will say, yes, I know, but, you know.
The other day I said to somebody, that's none of your beeswax.
Oh,
and
yes.
I'm like, oh, that sounded really bizarre.
Yes. I mean, you know, I remember that, you know, my grandmother would often say things like, oh, I feel like death warmed over.
Yes.
And so I may say something like that. So my tours are very tongue-in-cheek. I do like to laugh with people. I do like people to know that, because I do believe that ghosts are real. I think that people have said a lot of times after they've interviewed me and been on the tour that I have a flair for the dramatic and my voice is dramatic. I don't really know. I mean, I've been accused of having an accent, too. I don't know where the accent comes from. I've lived all over the United States. But I think it's more like an absence of an accent, maybe,
okay,
than an accent. But, yeah, I think that person in the book is me, even to the fact that the story, if you read The Brass Lantern Inn,
yes,
where I start off saying, my husband Roger and I went out to dinner, and I, and I actually, at the Bluebird Tavern, and I asked for a different seat, because in this restaurant where, you know, it was early in the, my husband Roger has a job that gets him up at 3:30 in the morning, so there we were on our anniversary, and I didn't really want to sit right next to the other people. It's my anniversary, so I told the server, we'd like to sit in a different place. These poor people probably don't want to listen to us all night long talking about how lucky we are. And so so that was a, I think I felt freer with this book to just go ahead and equate the different scenarios from the haunts with stuff that I'd experienced in life, and not just on haunts, but in life.
Okay, great. Let's see. Many of the stories, and one of them that I remember is the Queechy Inn, which is apparently quite haunted, involve furniture moving, paintings maybe changing position or flying off the wall, small objects being taken and put in unexpected places. Do you or anybody that you know have theories about what the purpose is of this kind of behavior? Like, what are they trying to get across?
They're trying to get your attention.
That's it.
Basically, they are trying to get your attention. I lived in a very haunted little house, a John Roberts cottage. John Roberts was an architect in Burlington in the 1800s. Disappeared mysteriously, so how much do I love that, right? Well, he created these little sort of Queen Anne story and a half Victorians, and people will know if they listen to me talk about them. There are some up on Mansfield Avenue. The one we lived in was Spring Street in Burlington, and they've got this lovely cross hatching underneath the roof, and then these little dots in the middle of the cross hatching, like a little, almost like a little kind of a gingerbread type of thing. The spirit that we had in our house would often turn the water on in the bathroom, and if that didn't get our attention, and I'm not just talking about going in and finding that the water is trickling like you might have something loose in there. I'm talking about sitting, watching TV, or mending something, or peeling potatoes, and all of a sudden, you hear the water turn on full blast in the bathroom. You go and turn it off, and then it comes on again.
Yeah.
Now, this would often happen to my daughter, who's very sensitive to spirits. And a lot of times it would happen in the afternoon while she was alone in the house doing her homework. And she would go in and turn the water off and turn the water off. And after she'd say, you know, no more, I don't want to have to come into this room one more time, she'd go out into the dining room to do her homework, and she would hear the TV turn on. And often the TV wouldn't be the only thing to turn on. The spirit would start playing with, you remember, VHS tapes. We had a VHS player. And so the VHS would come on, and it would wind and rewind and wind and rewind. Wow. So we had a very playful spirit, very active spirit in that house. They're just trying to get your attention. And
they must be bored.
I think that they are maybe not so much bored, but I think that a lot of the spirits, I'll tell you a little story about someone I know. I won't reveal who this is. Her father passed away. She was an only child. She and her father were like two peas in a pod. And so she spent a lot of time mourning and soul searching after he passed away. His death was untimely. And she was sitting, one morning she got up to make a cup of tea before her husband or her kids were awake, and she was sitting in her living room, and she said, you know, Dad, I wish that there was a way for you to give me a sign that you're doing okay. And while she sat there, the old-fashioned shade, you know, these old vinyl shades that you pull down, the old-fashioned shade that was pulled down the night before snapped up in the window, up to the very top.
Wow.
And she thought about it for a minute. She said, Dad, is that you? And she thought it couldn't be him. She went and she pulled it down again, made sure it was snug, went and sat down, picked up a magazine and started to read to distract herself, and it happened again.
Wow.
So,
and it didn't happen all the time.
And it didn't. Wasn't something that happened. It was just that loud noise of that, you know, and the shade going up, like, you know, like the window to the world. It's like he's saying, hey, you know, take a look at this. Look outside yourself. Don't be looking inside at me or what's happening with me. I'm here and it's cool. And a lot of people tell stories like that about these things that will happen, that it's more than coincidence, it's more than an accident. So I think they're definitely there's a purpose to it. Sometimes it's just that they're concerned about a new person in the house and something that's going on there. There's a radio show I do once a month, and a few years back, a gentleman who was restoring a farmhouse in Middlebury got in touch. He was a regular listener, and he said, I've been listening to the show, and I've got a problem I want to talk to you about. And he went on about how he was restoring this farmhouse, how he'd gone to the library and looked up the period, and he had restored it and painted it with all the appropriate colors. And I said, well, what's the problem? And he said, well, while I was working on it, I had three spirits here. I said, three? You're kidding me.
How do you know?
he could see them. They presented themselves as full-body apparitions to him. And so he said they would show up. They were quiet. They didn't speak to him, but they felt like company. So imagine this guy sawing and painting and, you know, and checking for studs and doing all of these things. And so I said, well, you know, I said, are you finished now? He said, oh yeah, the house is beautiful. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, the ghosts are gone now and I want to know how to get them back. Yeah. I said, knock down a wall. They were interested. Yeah. And so that's why they appeared to him. They had his attention. They were there making sure whatever their interest was, whatever time they had lived in the house, they were all interested and wanted to make sure that he was doing right by the place.
Yeah.
They probably worried that he would change it too much, that it wouldn't be familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
These things, strange but true. These things happen.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. So my last question for you, Thea, is sort of two different things. First, I'm wondering if you have advice for people who might be going to look for ghosts, perhaps for a thrill, you know, like by staying in a haunted inn. And also people who might be writing ghost stories.
Hmm. You know? Well, for people who might be writing ghost stories, I guess the thing that I would recommend is, when I started Queen City Ghost Walk, I knew that there were stories out there. I'd been hearing the urban legends of some of the places in Burlington before I ever had an inkling that I would be doing a ghost tour.
Yeah. But
the thing that really makes it most compelling, I think, is to do your research on the history and figure out, my goodness, you know, this is happening in this place. Well, why is it happening? There's a famous haunt in Burlington, the old Carver's Restaurant, which is now American Flatbread.
Yeah.
And for years, people thought that things that were happening in the basement, unfortunate things, some of them, were the result of a young man who'd taken his life inside Carver's Restaurant down in the basement.
Was he an employee?
He was an employee, yeah. He was one of the cooks there. And I've spoken with his family. They said that he had some stuff going on, just a young man who was unhappy. There was nothing really anybody could have done to prevent it, probably. People weren't really aware, I think, of the depth of his problems, his despair. But after that, as though it was a catalyst for a lot of crazy energy, people started saying, oh, you know, this is happening, that's happening. And I told the story that way. I researched that urban legend, researched that particular person who had worked there, and I thought, okay, well, maybe this tragic event really was the catalyst for something else that's gone on. I don't know what it was. And then as I dug deeper and deeper, I learned that the building was owned by a man named Gideon King, who was a smuggler.
Mm.
He lived in the city of Burlington. He had buildings, some of them that had false walls in the basement, all the better to hide the booty.
Mm.
And so it made our stories richer, being able to know
nooks and crannies.
Yeah, the superficial story,
the
obvious story was poor guy who shot himself in the basement. The whole more interesting to me story was the story of smugglers, tunnels underneath the city. This guy, he was bringing trade up and down Lake Champlain when we had a trade embargo going on. And the president had said that we weren't supposed to be bringing goods to Canada. But he told a customs agent on the lake he didn't care.
Yeah.
He said, I allow no man to tell me how to run my business. Why should the president be any different?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a fascinating story to me. So I would suggest that people do a lot of research, talk to a lot of people, get in touch with their local historical societies. It's a fascinating, it's just a wonderful resource.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. And then just one line maybe about people who want to go seek a thrill by staying in a haunted inn. Is there any advice you have?
Yeah. You know, I found that the people who have had the most fun staying in inns that are presumed to be haunted is to, you know, talk to the innkeepers, chat with them, and get to know the history of that place. Some people are very upfront about their inn's ghostly history. One One example is the Green Mountain Inn in Stowe.
Yeah.
Their ghost, Boots Berry, they're proud of Boots Berry, and bless them for that. We know people who have inns who have been known as haunts, popular haunts, for generations, who are new owners who don't embrace things as readily. And if you look at a place and you see a lot of stuff online saying, oh yeah, this place is haunted, and you decide to go, I would ask that you be a little bit respectful of that particular innkeeper and maybe just go on the down low and see what it is you experience. Nobody's going to know if in your room you have brought your digital recorders and you're staying up all night.
Right.
Nobody knows, nobody cares.
Nobody.
What happens in your B&B room stays in the B&B room. Right.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
From the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was an interview from the archives with Thea Lewis. You can learn more about her work at queencityghostwalk.com. This week's Write the Book prompt is to imagine a creepy scenario that has always frightened you. Maybe it has to do with going into the basement or up into the attic. Maybe it centers on a certain person who leaves you feeling unsettled. Are you afraid of water, of heights, of open spaces? Focus on one of your most haunting fears and consider how you might turn it around. If the idea of being up high frightens you, maybe write about a person who delights in great heights, a gymnast, or Philippe Petit, who famously walked a tightrope strung between the Twin Towers in 1974. If you're afraid of water, imagine being a long-distance swimmer. Write about this person's attitude, and then midway into whatever it is you're writing, let your own phobia slip in and change what they are feeling or experiencing. What happens? Good luck with your work in the coming week. And tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. A reminder to listeners who write, I do share a writing prompt each week, so be sure to check the archives of Write the Book if you'd like to find any that you might have missed. I would love your feedback about the show. Book podcasts are a real mix, and there are a lot of them now. So if you feel we do this well, we would love to know that. Please be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We are also on all the podcast sites. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe to Write the Book. If you do like the show, please rate it where you find it, leave a review, and talk about it. And please do get in touch with me and let me know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear. You can visit Write the Book on social media sites. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. Up next at 5 o'clock, stay tuned for Feminist Frenzy, the radio show with a feminist agenda. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.